Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasz Ziolkowski.
And I'm so glad you are.
Thank you.
And today is Monday, January 8th. And astonishingly enough, this is our first radio broadcast for the new year, 2024. And I'm excited about this.
I am too. This has been some kind of holiday. We've gone almost no place. We did go to a movie, which was wonderful, about a week ago.
Transported to another universe.
We saw a wonderful movie called The Boys in the Boat.
Oh, Jose's been talking about that.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Jose will love it because it's about athletics. It's about rowing.
Right.
He'll
right.
love it. It is the best done athletic film I've ever seen. As far as for me, as a coach, I was engaged in all the action, and it wasn't done stupidly. There were no phony things going on. There was no crazy stuff. It was just serious athletic achievement. The coach was real strong. The guys in the boat, the rowers were just wonderful, hardworking athletes. And it's a true story. I kept thinking about it when Terry mentioned it. And I thought, I think I know that story. And she said, really? I said, yeah. I think I listened to it on tape years ago, on a audio tape.
Uh-huh.
And sure enough, as soon as we were in a theater for, 5 or 6 minutes after it had started, I was like, this is the story. I know this. And it's a true story. It's just a wonderful, wonderful true story. And George Clooney directed it.
Right.
So what a great job. I just I'll never get to talk to him. But if I ever did, I would tell him, best athletic film I've seen. Wonderful. It had a little bit of fluff in it, just a tiny bit of personal stuff, but very little. And it didn't take away from the story. Nothing distracted from the story of these young men, which was a wonderful, they were college athletes and they were in a place where no one would have put them except this coach. and became Olympic champions.
Yeah. They were heroes.
Just wonderful. I just loved it, Maybe all excited. I felt like, man, I should be coaching again.
Okay. Well, we can talk more about that. Our theme today for storytelling is traditional tales. So we'll see if we can fit that one in somewhere.
Well, no. My coaching days are gut.
I want to thank Andy Offit Irwin for opening our show, as he always does, the first Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour for 2024. Thank you, Andy.
Yep.
And I understand from our pre-show babble that you want me to go first with my story.
Yes, I always like you to go first, because that way the people hear this lovely voice.
Aww.
And you're all very professional. And that gives me a chance to get over my nervousness.
Nerves? The nerveless man.
Yeah. I am? I'm the great pretender.
All storytellers do that,
I think so.
Okay. Well, this is Anansi and Grandmother's Beans, traditional tale from Africa. Many, many years ago in Africa when Anansi the spider was just a boy. He would sometimes go to grandmother's house to help her. And one bright and beautiful morning, that is what he did. When he got to grandmother's house, he knocked on her door. Grandmother opened the door and Anansi said, "Good morning, grandmother. I'm here to help you again. What work do you have for me to do today?" And grandmother said, "Oh, Anansi, good morning. I'm so glad you're here. I really need your help to get some beans planted. Thank you for coming today. Here are some beans you can use for planting. I saved them from my crop of beans that I harvested last year. If you use these few beans as seeds and plant each one in a small hole you make in my garden, they will grow into strong, tall, and bushy bean plants that I will then have many, many, many beans for my meals all through the coming year. Make a row of small holes, just this big in my garden, and put a bean in each hole. When you're finished doing that and use up all the seed beans, be sure to cover up the holes and water them carefully. And then spread this old cloth over the holes so the crows don't eat the seed beans before they sprout. I can take the cloth off when the sprouts start to come up." Grandmother gave Anansi a digging stick to make the holes, a very small bag of bean seeds, and an old, very long and raggedy strip of cloth to cover up the beans once they were planted. She showed him where in the garden he should plant the beans, and then she said, "It's a good thing you brought your hat. It's going to be a hot and sunny day. While you do the planting, I'll be cooking some spicy beans for our lunch." And she went into her house to start cooking. Now, Anansi loved grandmother's spicy beans, so that was good news to him. He went right to the garden and used the digging stick to make the holes just this big in the garden, just as grandmother said. And she was right. It was a hot and sunny day, and he was glad he'd worn his wide, broad-brimmed gardening hat. Meanwhile, grandmother was in her kitchen, putting the beans that she had saved for cooking and then a lot of fresh water from her water well into a big heavy pot on the stove. But when she opened the cupboard to find the special spices to go into the pot, "Oh my goodness," said grandmother to herself, "I have plenty of green chilies, red paprika, and white garlic I grew in the garden. But I forgot I needed to get more black pepper, brown cinnamon, and yellow cumin from the market." She went to tell Anansi, "Grandson, I have plenty of green chilies, red paprika, and white garlic I grew in the garden. But I forgot I needed to get more black pepper, brown cinnamon, and yellow cumin from the garden. I must go to market. I won't be long. Do not go into the kitchen. There is a hot pot, a very heavy hot pot, on the stove with the beans cooking in it. I've already added the green chilies, red paprika, and white garlic I grew in the garden. When I get back with the black pepper, brown cinnamon, and yellow cumin, we'll have lunch." And she set off, walking as fast as she could go with her tall walking stick to the market. Anansi nodded and watched grandmother set off down the road. He finished making the holes with the digging stick and started putting the seeds in the holes, one seed in each hole, just as grandmother said. But about that time, he started smelling those beans cooking. There was a bit of breeze in the air, as there often was at grandmother's house, and the steam from the cooking pot came wafting out of her open kitchen window and all around the outside of the house. Anansi had been working hard with that digging stick, and he was taking deep breaths every time as he worked. And every time he took a breath, he could smell those delicious beans. It had been several hours since breakfast at home, and Anansi was getting hungry with all that walking he had done to get to grandmother's house. And now he was working hard in the garden. And the more he smelled those delicious beans, the hungrier he got. No, Anansi told himself. Finish this planting, just as grandmother said. She'll be back soon, and then we'll have those spicy beans. He finished putting the seeds into the holes he made with the digging stick and sat back to admire the nice straight row of holes with the seed beans sitting plump and bright in the holes. And he took a deep breath of satisfaction. And he could just smell those delicious beans. Well, he said, putting down his digging stick, not be any harm in just smelling those beans in the pot. And he went right up to the open kitchen window and took three deep breaths. Oh, and he forgot all about grandmother saying, I won't be long, don't go into the kitchen. Instead, he said to himself, well, there cannot be any harm in just looking at those beans in the pot. And he went right into grandmother's kitchen, took the cover off of grandmother's pot. He looked and he looked and he looked at those beans. And the longer he looked, the hungrier he got. And finally, he just could not stand being hungry for one more minute. Anansi said to himself, there cannot be any harm in just a very small taste. He picked up grandmother's big spoon and scooped up a tiny taste and blew on the spoon to cool down those hot beans. And he ate the beans right off the spoon and swallowed them down. Of course, they were delicious. And Anansi said to himself, oh, there cannot be any harm in another very small taste. And he went on having taste after taste till there were just not very many beans left in the pot. And that was right about the time he heard a commotion outside. Anansi could hear people shouting and loud bird calls. Grandmother's neighbors were running to the garden, to her garden, waving their digging sticks and waving their arms, trying to chase away a whole flock of crows that had seen the bean seeds in the holes that Anansi had forgotten to fill back over with soil and then cover up with that old, very long and raggedy strip of cloth to keep the birds and animals from eating up the seed beans until they could sprout. But there were only two neighbors and there were a lot of crows and they had been very busy in those few minutes that Anansi was in the kitchen. Anansi was horrified. What would grandmother have to say about this? And what about the beans that were now missing from the pot, the ones he had eaten? Anansi did not know what to do. He just wanted to hide the fact that he ate all those beans. So he pulled off his wide, broad-brimmed gardening hat and set it upside down on the kitchen table. And he poured every bit of the remaining cooked beans into his hat. But he could see the neighbors running to grandmother's kitchen door through the window, and without another thought in his head, he picked up that hat and put it on his head. So when the neighbors burst through the door all out of breath and shouting about crows in the garden, crows in the garden, Anansi was standing there with hot beans under his hat and his eyes as big as bean bowls and his hands holding that hat tight to the top of his head. Anansi, where's grandmother? There are crows in the garden. Anansi could not think of a single thing to answer them. Instead, he just held on to that hat with the hot beans steaming on top of his head and his eyes as big as bean bowls. He did start to cry at that point because those beans were very hot. And just about that time, grandmother came through the kitchen door and saw Anansi with bean water dripping down his neck and his eyes as big as bean bowls. She knew her grandson very well. And in an instant, she knew what had happened. She was very disappointed in Anansi. But grandmother also had a fine sense of humor. And she could not stop herself from laughing. And once she started laughing, she could not stop. And all the neighbors all laughed with her. Anansi laughed too, but he was just pretending, because when grandmother pulled off Anansi's hat, everyone could see that Anansi had lost every hair on the top of his head from those hot, spicy beans. Anansi ran all the way home and stayed there all by himself, hiding for shame and embarrassment for a long time. Grandmother found some more seed beans with help from her neighbors, and she finally came to Anansi's house, decided he had suffered enough, and hugged him and took him back to her house for a meal of spicy beans. Some of the hair grew back on Anansi's spider head, but most of it did not. And that is why spiders are usually very hairy all over their bodies, but almost never on the top of their heads.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
I love that story. That's great. That was 11 minutes and 20 seconds.
Oh, I'm so glad you timed that.
Well, I try to do my job.
I thought it was going to be much longer than that, and I forgot to time it. So thank you.
Well,
11 what?
11:20.
Thank you.
That was good. So I, you know, we didn't make any announcements at the beginning of the show.
We didn't. We're in sort of a waiting period, I think. But
well,
I do have a couple, and I'm sure you do too.
Okay. Well, would you like to go ahead and make your announcement?
No, you go ahead first.
Okay. Speak Story Series. Phew. Speak Story Series. Year 12. Whoa. How about that? I do have the lineup almost. So, starting in February, Gail Ross. I have almost no information about people, except that these are all wonderful storytellers. And Gail Ross, of course, is a distant relative of John, I think his name is John Ross, who was the leader of his Native American tribe during the Trail of Tears.
Cherokees.
Cherokees. Thank you. I'm glad that you're a historical person.
Well, but, I also read the blurb on the speed website.
Okay. So in March, we have Peter Cook, who is a deaf storyteller. And
he's amazing. I heard him in Jonesboro.
Yeah, I believe I have seen him in Jonesboro also.
Yeah.
Okay. April, Antonio Raja. Oh, boy. Talk about amazing. Okay. I've seen him a number of times. And once I saw him at Beaver Tales in Beaver, Pennsylvania, which was phenomenal. And let's see, in May, Elizabeth Rose. In June, Dolores Hydock. In July, something I'm really looking for, because these are cranky. In the advertisement, it said crankies. And I didn't know what a cranky was until I actually performed with the person who did a cranky. And that was at Susan Gordon's. And it was, oh my goodness, I'm going blank. Susan Connolly, I forget the last name. Anyway, a great storyteller, and who I had met in Pittsburgh. First time I performed at the Pittsburgh Three River Storytelling Festival, I was on stage following Susan. And I was so impressed, because I knew she was a national storyteller, that after her set, she walked off the stage, took a lot of applause, and sat in the front row and stayed for my set,
aww,
which really impressed me. you know, and was very complimentary after that. And since then, we have performed a number of times together, which was wonderful.
But what's the teller's name for these crankies?
Catherine Fahey and Daniel Van Allen. And I'm really looking forward to that. I've been tempted to try to make a box for the crankies a couple of times, but it's one of those things that's probably 17th on my list of things to do. And I probably won't get there. In August, somebody you know, and I know you think very highly of, Eileen Evans. I'm looking forward to that. She's a wonderful storyteller.
Steve. And a wonderful mentor.
Yes. And in September, we don't know. But that's going to be a surprise that we're waiting to, I guess Adam is trying to finalize the contract. In October, Adam Booth and a guest. We don't know who that is either. Adam is getting to be kind of tricky here. A nice surprise will be. And then in November, the 2024 commission, a world premiere of a new, brand new story. And someone will be chosen by the end of February. Someone will be chosen from a list of candidates who have applied to receive a very nice payment for their story. Plus, they will be performing in November and introducing this world premiere. So that's the speak lineup for 2024. And you can go to speakstoryseries.com and get season tickets and donate money if you want to and find out all kind of new stuff. Adam has made some new investments into technical things so that all the storytelling from Speak will be promoted and will be online as well as in person. And also, he's made arrangements so that people will be able to see the stories for a week or two after that first. There's going to be recordings that are available for this people with this season tickets. So I'm looking forward to this new season. It's going to
pretty
be exciting.
Exciting.
And there's going to be a new venue, which has not been announced yet. Where the venue is going to be, we don't know yet. Adam is working on, there are two places, and he's working on a final contract. So that'll be announced very soon. It's going to be an exciting time.
It is. These are exciting times, for sure.
Oh,
for story
of course. 2024, are you kidding me? I can't believe it. We're within less than two decades before my 100th birthday.
Okay, something to look forward to.
Well, I'm really looking forward to something that's even more important to me. And this is only because of my childhood and everything. I always wondered when I was a kid, they would talk about all these guys in the Bible. Lived to 942 years. And it finally dawned on me. It took me a long time. It finally dawned on me. I think the people in the old days, they weren't counting years. They were counting months. You know, they were going by the moon or something. So, and a few years ago, I figured out that if you live to be 83 and 4 months, you will have lived 1,000 months.
All right.
And so, and so on December 28th of 2024, I will be 1,000 months old.
Are you going to have a party?
I'm going to at least dance in my living room.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, and maybe I will. And I know. I've told a couple of people that, it's interesting when you tell people something that you think is very interesting and exciting, and when they look at you as if you just said, my nose is going to fall off in 3 seconds. And they stare at you expecting.
I am going to begin working on a story, The 1,000-Year-Old Man.
There you go. How about a 1,000-Month-Old Man?
Well, you can change the title if you want.
Okay. Oh, yes. It's your story. So are you sure? Okay. So.
Oh, my.
Can you give me a time check?
It won't be an amazingly 20, accurate
I think
one.
It's 27 or 28 minutes, I think.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, so 28 minutes. There you go. All right, so.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Okay, and so if you're ready for me, I'm
well,
going to do a story.
I do want to give a station ID. You're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasi Okowski.
We're going to stop blathering, and Sasha's going to tell another story.
Okay. All right, here we go. This is one of my very favorite stories. I haven't told this for a long time, and I don't think I've ever told it on the radio, but I may have. And if I did, it would probably have been 5 or 6 years ago. All right, this is called The Chinese Princess. And it's from one of my favorite storytelling book called Old Wives Fairy Tale Book. And I've had this book for a long, long, long time. And it's all crunched up and everything, but it's really wonderful. So here we go. In the reign of the Emperor Shah Jahan, the Valley of Kashmir was under the rule of a governor named Ali Mardan Khan. He was very fond of hunting. One day he was in search of game in a forest, not far from the beautiful Dial Lake, where he saw a stag. Leaving his companions behind, he gave chase to it. After some time, the stag eluded him and disappeared into some bushes. Ali Mardan drew rein and waited in the hope that it would come out again. But there was no sign of it. He was tired and disappointed, and he was returning to his companions when he heard the sound of someone crying. He went in the direction of the sound, and there he found a seated in the tree, a surpassing beauty, richly dressed and bejeweled, although her clothes were a little bit torn. It was obvious that she did not belong to this country. Ali Mardan was dazzled by her beauty. He dismounted and inquired of her as to who she was and why she was crying. "Oh, sir," she replied, "I am the daughter of a Chinese king. My father fell in a battle between him and the ruler of a neighboring province. Many of our noblemen were taken prisoner, but I somehow managed to escape. Since then, I have been wandering from place to place until I reached here." "Fair maiden," Ali Mardan replied, "now you need wander no more. No harm will come to you, for I am the ruler of this country." The Chinese princess wept. "Oh, my lord," she said, "I weep for my father, I weep for my mother, I weep for my country, and I weep for myself. What will become of me, friendless and homeless? How can I live?" "Weep no more, my lovely one," the king said compassionately. "Stay in my palace, where you will be safe and comfortable." "That gladly will I do," said the girl. On hearing these words, Ali Mardan's face brightened. He held the girl's hands. "Come to me, my beloved. I will make you my wife." And I took her to his palace. And they were married soon after. Ali Mardan and his wife spent some time happily together, when one day she approached him saying, "Lord, would you build me a palace by the lake from where... from the balcony, I could see my reflection in the water." Thereupon, Ali Mardan immediately gave orders for the construction of a new palace. Thousands of laborers and masons were engaged to complete the building, and in the shortest possible time, a beautiful palace of marble adorned the bank of the Dal Lake. It was enclosed on three sides by gardens full of flowers of the rarest fragrance and beauty. And there beside the lake, she lived happily with Ali Mardan, whose love for her increased every day. "I have a pain in my stomach," he told his Chinese wife. He did not feel well. He did not worry much about it, but as the pain increased throughout the day, his wife sent for the royal physician, who examined him and gave him some medicine. But still, the pain did not subside. Ali Mardin was confined to his room, and the Chinese princess constantly attended to his needs. Many days passed, but his malady was no better. Now, it chanced that a young yogi was passing by way of the Dal Lake, carrying a small jar of water. He was surprised to see the new palace. "I have never seen a palace here before. Who could have built it, I wonder?" As he felt tired, he went into the garden of the palace and sat down on a tree. He was so much at peace that he felt among the flower beds, and so sweetly did the birds sing that soon he was lulled to sleep. Now, at this very hour, Ali Mardin, feeling slightly better, was having a stroll in the garden. He was walking slowly, and Ali Mardin was a man of humble heart and always showed great respect towards holy men, irrespective of their beliefs. So instead of becoming angry with the intruder, he smiled. "Don't disturb the sleeping yogi," he said to his attendants. "Go bring the best bed you can find and lay this holy man gently upon it." Then seeing the jar of water, he added, "Take great care of this too." A few hours later, when the yogi awoke, he was surprised to find himself on such a comfortable bed. "Don't worry," said an attendant who approached, seeing him awake. "You are the guest of Ali Mardin, the governor of Kashmir, who desires to see you." Then, noticing that he was searching for something, the attendant said, "Your jar of water is in safe custody, rest assured." He was then taken to the governor's room. He found him lying on his bed. "Have you rested well, holy man? Who are you and from where do you come?" "Sire," replied the yogi, "I am a humble disciple of my guru who lives some distance from here. My master likes to drink the water of a sacred spring and sends me every now and then to fetch it. The last time I passed this day, there was no palace here, so I was surprised to find this one. But I must now take leave of you. I am already delayed and my master will be anxious if I don't come back before dark." The yogi then thanked him for his kindness and was just leaving the bedroom when Ali Mardin was seized by a spasm of pain. On inquiring, the yogi came to know of the governor's mysterious malady. He then left the palace. That evening, the yogi returned to his master and related to him the events of the day. He particularly mentioned the hospitality shown to him by the governor. The guru was very pleased to hear it. Then the disciple told him how the governor was in the grip of a strange illness, which no physician had so far been able to cure. "I am sorry to hear about his illness," said the guru. "Take me to him tomorrow, and we will see if we can do anything to help him." Next morning, the disciple took his master to the palace and sought an audience with the governor. The disciple introduced his master to Ali Mardin in the governor's bedroom and also told him the purpose of their visit. "I am much honored by your holy presence," said Ali Mardin. "And show me your body," said the holy man. Hardly had he uncovered himself when the guru inquired, "Have you recently married?" "Why, yes," said Ali Mardin, and briefly told the holy man of his encounter with the Chinese princess and of his marriage. "Just as I suspected," I observed the holy man. Then in grave tones, "Oh, governor, you are really very ill, but I can cure you if you do as I tell you." The governor was alarmed and assured the holy man that he would do as he was bidden because he desperately wanted to be healthy again. That evening, Ali Mardin, as instructed by the guru, ordered two kinds of khichdi to be cooked, one sweet and the other salty, and placed on one dish in such a way that the salty khichdi was on one side and the sweet on the other. When, as usual, the governor and his Chinese wife sat down to eat, he turned the salty side of the dish toward her. She found her portion too salty, but seeing that her husband was eating with relish, she made no remark and ate in silence. When the time came for them to retire, Ali Mardin, under the instructions of the guru, had secretly given orders to the tenants that the drinking water should be removed from their bedroom and that the room should be locked from outside. As was expected, the Chinese princess woke up very thirsty in the middle of the night, and finding no water and no way out, she became desperate. She looked at her husband to assure herself that he was fast asleep. Then she assumed the shape of a snake, slipped through the window, and went down to the lake to quench her thirst. After a few minutes, she returned by the same way and resumed her human shape, lay down beside her husband again. Ali Marden, who in fact had been feigning sleep, was horrified at what he watched. He was unable to sleep for the rest of the night. Early next morning, he sought the holy man and told him what had happened in the night. "Oh, governor," said the holy man, "as you have seen, your wife is no woman, but a lamia, a snake woman." Then he explained all of it to Ali Marden. "If for 100 years the glance of no human being falls on a snake, a crest forms on its head, and it becomes the king of snakes. And if for another 100 years it comes not within sight of a man, it changes into a dragon. And if for 300 years it has not been looked upon by a human being, it becomes a lamia. A lamia possesses enormous powers and can change its appearance at will. It is very fond of assuming the form of a woman. Such is your wife." "Horrors," exclaimed the governor, "but where is there no escape from this monster?" "Yes, there is," replied the holy man, "but we must act cautiously so as not to arouse suspicion. For if she suspects even remotely that her secret is disclosed, she will destroy not only you, but your country as well. Therefore, you must do precisely what I tell you." Then the guru told the governor of his plan, which was carried out at once. A house of lac was built at some distance from the palace. Lac is a special kind of wood. It had only a bedroom and a kitchen. A big oven with a strong lid was built in the kitchen. The royal physician then advised Ali Marden to continue, find himself in the house for 40 days. During this period, no one but his wife should be allowed to see him. His wife was only too glad to have Ali Marden all to herself. A few days passed during which she happily attended to all his needs. One day, Ali Marden told his wife, the physician has prescribed a special loaf for me. Will you cook it for me?" I dislike ovens," she said. "But my life is in danger," said the governor. "If you really love me, do this for me." She had no alternative but to cook the loaf. She went to the kitchen and set to work. Just when she stooped over the mouth of the oven to turn the loaf, Ali Marden, seizing the opportunity, collected all his strength, pushed her in and clamped down the lid so that she was unable to escape. He then hurried out and, as directed by the holy man, set light to the house, which, being made of lac, flared up instantaneously. "You have done well," said the guru, who just then came up now. "Now go to your palace and rest there for 2 days. On the third, come to me and I will show you something." The governor obeyed, and in those days, his health was completely restored. He became as cheerful and strong as he had been on the day he met his fake Chinese princess. On the third day, as appointed, Ali Marden and the guru went to the place where the house of lac had stood. All that was left of it was a heap of ashes. "Look carefully in the ashes," said the holy man, "and you will find a pebble among them." Ali Marden searched for a few minutes. "Here it is," he said at last. "Good. Now, which will you have, the pebble or the ashes?" "The pebble," answered the king. "All right," said the holy man, "then I will take the ashes." Whereupon he carefully wrapped the ashes in the hem of his garment and went away with his disciple. Ali Marden soon discovered the virtue of the pebble. It was the philosopher's stone, the touch of which can change all metals into gold. What the worth of the ashes was remained a secret, for Ali Marden never saw the guru or his disciple again. Thank you.
A great ending.
I love that story. Gosh.
I've never heard anything like that one before.
When I first learned that story, I liked it so much, but I didn't. The ending left me puzzled, you know? I liked the ending and all, but I wanted to perform it, and I thought, what can I do for that? So I actually wrote a new ending on that.
Uh-oh.
And the ending I wrote was that when they stirred up the ashes, the guru reached down and pulled up two things. And he said to Ali Mardan, "Choose, would you have this one or this?" And he opened his hands up and there were two eyeballs. So Ali Mardan took one of the eyeballs and he said, "Keep this. This will help you in your future. It is magical. And whenever you need something, hold this in your hand and wish. And if it is something that you deserve to have, it will come true." And Ali Mardan looked at him and said, "And what of the other one?" And the guru looked at him and said, "Ah, but you did not choose this one. This one will go with me. It has a different value." And they parted. And when I told that story, I found two white spheres, small ones, and painted an eyeball on it. Painted a black dot with a color in the center. And when I would do this story, I often did it at like near a campfire or a pretend fire, and I would reach into the ashes and take these out, and I would tell the end of it that way and show the kids the two eyes and put one in my pocket. And it became very popular. I told it a number of times in libraries and stuff. And I still have the eyes. I didn't get them this morning. I know they're in my treasure someplace, in my treasury.
Such a wizard you are.
Well, I like objects when I tell stories. If at all possible, I like to have things to aid the story. Takes away from people looking at me.
So. Not really. But
okay. No. They still look at me, but they don't pay attention so much to my face.
Oh my.
So.
Okay. We talked about making announcements about storytelling, and I was going to follow your announcement about Speak with an announcement about the Women's Storytelling Festival. I forgot to do that, so let me do that now.
Yes.
If our listeners go to bettersaidthandone.com, they can find information about the National Women's Storytelling Festival, which is Friday, March 24th through Sunday, March 26th. It's at Old Town Hall in Fairfax, in Virginia. And I'm going to be telling, as well as a lot of other women tellers.
Wow.
And I will be so excited to be appearing with them. Jane Dorfman will be there.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Trying to remember who else. Donna Washington, Megan Hicks. Lots and lots and lots of wonderful tellers.
Boy, you're going to be among some wonderful company.
So it's going to be very exciting. You can come for just, you know, one or two of the sessions, or you can be there for the whole weekend. And it will also be on Zoom. So even people who live far away can participate.
And what are you going to tell?
I'm going to tell a series about my mother.
Oh, so okay, good.
I've been working on that story since, well, forever.
Exactly.
And I have some new ones, and I'm putting them together in different ways. And
well, that'll be wonderful. I like hearing your mother tell her stories. I know your mother won't be there, but you will be telling her story as your mother. So,
yes, I knew what you meant.
Yes, right. I figured I better explain that.
So everybody should check out bettersaidthandone.com. And there will be about, I think, the last time I was there, which was at the very start of COVID, the first festival was the first serious weekend of COVID. And only 2 out of 25 or so tellers canceled. But about a third of the audience canceled, but the rest of us were there. And I never heard of anybody getting sick during that festival. But it was wonderful. There have been several women's festivals on Zoom since then. And this is the first one back live.
Wow.
All in Fairfax, Virginia. But
nobody got sick enough. I know why. It's the magical breath of storytelling.
There you go.
Covers the audience and they're protected.
So I just wanted to tell you, Stosh, that about 20% of the audience are men.
Wow.
So you should definitely come if you can, either on Zoom or in person. Of course, it would be much better.
Well, I will definitely watch it on Zoom. We have been doing so much traveling because of medical issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some of them have been good. Positive traveling, except for it's a 200-mile round trip every time we have to do something with my brother because he lives so far away.
Taking care of family.
And we're taking care of family and stuff. And this is not poor Stosh, but I have had some trouble. You know, I've had some problems with my legs this year and other things like falling. But I'm happy to say my new pacemaker in my heart is doing good things for me. And my physical therapy has been helping. My legs seem to be stronger, but not strong enough that I'm interested in doing too many things outside the house.
I can understand that.
You know, I did go for a walk about 5 days ago. I went for a walk of about 100 yards on the street next to my house. I was being very bold. My wife was running an errand to the library or something, and I walked up the street to the corner and back down. I was glad to get back to the house without having any problems. I have a doctor's appointment next week, and I'm hoping that my new doctor, Dr. Ishigami, who is a pain management doctor, is going to have wonderful news for me. I'm hoping that part of that wonderful news is not about surgery, because he is concerned about my spine. I do have a history of spinal stenosis, and I've had back surgery for that 15 years ago, which helped. At that time, I was living in Arkansas, and in a period of about 3 weeks, my legs were bothering me. All of a sudden, I was unsteady, could hardly stand up without feeling wobbly, and then went to the doctors, found out about this spinal stenosis. And it turns out that a number of my siblings, both my brothers and my sister, each had surgery on their back for that. And so the Dr. Shigami is studying results of all kind of tests that they've been doing on me. And hopefully he's going to say, here it is. I found the magic formula. Touch my head with a wand or something and my legs will be great. But the fact is that I'm hoping that he will have an answer for me because I'm still not really comfortable with my legs. I wake up every morning
I'll be waiting to hear the outcome and hoping for very good news. I think we have about
3 minutes.
No, we have longer than that. We have 7 minutes,
It's been 51 minutes.
Oh, okay. So we won't get to hear Mr. Fox
52
today.
Minutes. No, Mr. Fox will have to stay at home for a while. I just, you know.
Okay. Well, then I will just mention that Black Storytellers of Western Maryland, including me, will be telling stories at the Hagerstown Library on February 9th. It is their regular children's storytelling hour. And I'm really looking forward to that. There will be a variety of stories. Of course, it's a celebration of Black history, part of the library celebration of Black history, but it will be among the first of the Black Storytellers of Western Maryland's performances. Right. So,
and is that a Friday?
That is a Friday, yes, I believe so.
Very good.
I think it's about 11 o'clock, but if you call me at 301-730-1638, I can give you more information about that. That's a relatively close event.
Yeah.
Just at the beginning of February, but the Women's Storytelling Festival, of course, is in March, so that's a little further off.
Right.
Does Speak start in April?
Or no, Speak February.
In February, okay. I didn't write down all the months.
Gail Ross.
Yep, very good.
I'm looking forward to that. She's a mentor.
That's a great lineup.
Yes, very exceptional. So, and do you have lined up anybody for stories in the round?
I have several people asking to come. I do not have anything like a lineup yet, but I am beginning to put the roster together. So and as soon as I know, you will know.
Okay. And is that in February?
No. It will probably start in April. I already have a couple, but considering March. I'm not real enthusiastic about starting in March. I think I'll need the time to get everything together. We'll see. Well, and the other thing is the weather.
Right.
March is iffier than.
Right.
And I don't have the technology that Speak has. So if we're not live, we're not doing an event.
No, but I do know that Stories in a Round is important to many people.
So I'm hearing a number of people have sent me congratulations.
Right, and
us.
I will be there whenever you're willing to ready to start.
Okay.
And
as
much as possible, I'll be sitting at the table collecting money. One of the things I love to do.
And I love you to do it.
Yeah. I like greeting the people. And the Stories in a Round is very special. Not as big as Speak. And all that stuff with technology, but it is, to me, it is a wonderful, special place to tell stories, and I've been privileged to appear there a number of times.
We have an incredible audience.
Your audience is wonderful, and it always feels good to be there.
You know? Thank you. That's good to know.
Right.
Okay.
I have been searching for a number of years for another thing for us to do, and I have not found a good one yet. There's a limited number of two-person plays that we could read to the audience and I know they would enjoy it.
Well, I will wait for you to find one.
I know. I keep waiting for you to write one.
Oh, yeah. Good luck with that.
Okay. Well,
all right.
If you
are telling me time is up, then I am going to close out the show.
It is. It's been 56-plus minutes.
Okay. Now. Well, this is Fanny Crawford.
And Stosh Ziolkowski.
Your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland, offering our listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, and encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for John Case and
Roots. Lots of roots today. I'm changing the name of country to Roots.
All right, that sounds good.
You know, go around the world. That way I get to do, you know,